Audio version of Michael Leitman's blog. February 15, 2021. My new article on LinkedIn, The Guide to Life Online. Whether we like it or not, we live online. Staying home has taken on global proportions after more than a year of the pandemic. It is now more evident than ever that we are linked to each other in an interdependent way, that we constantly influence each other through various online communication tools and platforms. How can we make the best out of this new reality? We will obtain the ultimate benefit by putting on accurate glasses to examine the nature of our new relationships. Since what we call normal life may never fully return, we would do well to learn to live in the new environment in a proper and meaningful way. Imagine invisible threads that connect all the hearts, all the minds, all the desires, all the thoughts, connecting between everything and everyone. This network of connections has two possible states, an initial natural state, and a more advanced state that we must reach through proactive choice and recognition. The prolonged closure of workplaces and businesses as a result of the extended COVID-19 crisis has transformed employment and lifestyle for millions of Americans and people around the world who now work, study, communicate and socialize virtually. Online living is expected to remain a long-lasting part of our lifestyle even after the health crisis ends. A recent Pew Research study revealed that of the 71% of the people surveyed who work full-time from home, 54% would want to keep doing so even after the pandemic is under control if they are offered such an option. Since what we call normal life may never fully return, we would do well to learn to live in the new environment in a proper and meaningful way. Imagine invisible threads that connect all the hearts, all the minds, all the desires, all the thoughts, connecting between everything and everyone. This network of connections has two possible states, an initial natural state, and a more advanced state that we must reach through proactive choice and recognition. In the first situation, individuals within the network feel only their own interests, and try to use others to fulfill their desires. Such a self-focused approach fills the network atmosphere with a negative and destructive sense of competition, control, divisiveness and hatred. Basically, no one sleeps quietly, everyone suffers in one way or another. In the more advanced situation, individuals begin to feel that they are parts of one collective with a common goal and that they are completely dependent on each other. The relationship between members of the collective is based on reciprocity, completion, giving, and love. The definition of success in the second scenario is communal, where everyone strives to do the best for others. These two situations are completely opposite from each other. The world that is felt in the first state is a difficult world, while the world that is felt in the second state is a beautiful one. Who is it that determines where I will live? I do, by my attitude toward others. If I relate to everyone through an egoistic view of self-gratification, I live as usual in a world where our relationships deteriorate day by day. But if I succeed in developing an attitude above my personal egoism, to include the concerns of others who are not me, an upside-down world will open up to me, a higher and more positive world will be revealed. The reason that I cannot feel it now is because I have not yet developed the attributes required to grasp it. This is somewhat similar to the way radio broadcasts work. What determines which station I will listen to is the internal frequency to which my receiver is tuned. The network that we live within is one and the same. The connections between everyone already exist whether we feel them or not. If I manage to develop a new nature of love your neighbor as yourself and I treat others with love and consideration, I will begin to feel that in this network of relationships there is an eternal and complete power line which fills me with goodness. This power source directs us, perfectly and clears our understanding to reveal that life has a very lofty purpose unable to be hindered by anyone or anything. If this shift in attitude is put in practice in our human relationships, It will illuminate our virtual environment and we will realize that every moment of our lives will become an opportunity to connect with the force of love that fills all of creation at the touch of a finger. My new article on LinkedIn on the verge of despair. Little by little, the realization sinks in, nothing seems to make things better, not the new year, not the new administration, and not the vaccines. Living on the fast track simply isn't working anymore. It hasn't been working for the past year, and it seems like it isn't going to start working anytime soon. And the more we realize it, the more we become despaired. There is a good reason why it seems like the world is running out of gas. Since time immemorial, our fuel has been the search for the next pleasure, the next thing to gain, or the next advantage over others. We've been running on a fuel that boosts the ego, where the ego saw no benefit, we had no fuel to work. There is a good reason why it seems like the world is running out of gas. Since time immemorial, our fuel has been the search for the next pleasure, the next thing to gain, or the next advantage over others. We've been running on a fuel that boosts the ego, where the ego saw no benefit, we had no fuel to work. Over the past year, our egos have had so many letdowns that many are beginning to doubt whether the ego is really the king we should be serving. Perhaps the futile pursuit of pleasures, which we stop wanting soon after we obtain them, has exposed its inevitable pointlessness. After all, if you already know that once you get what you want, you'll soon get tired of it, what's the point of getting it in the first place? Our time is a time of recognition of the truth about our motivations, our civilization, our values, and ultimately about who we are as human beings. The picture that this realization exposes is not pretty, but it is very sincere, and from a point of sincerity, healthy growth begins. This is why I think our time is so amazing, for all its difficulties. We are in a time of a great shift. We are shifting from perceiving the world as individuals to perceiving it as an integral system of which we are all parts, and in which we are all one. Perceiving the world as individuals compelled us to seek only our own benefit. However, this put us at odds with the direction of nature's development. Nature is evolving toward increasing complexity, interdependence, and reciprocity. When you're trying to go in the opposite direction to all of reality, bad things are bound to happen. This conflict between nature's trajectory and our trajectory has been the root cause of all our misfortunes, especially since we've begun to accentuate our individualism early in the 20th century, but it has picked up pace tremendously since the turn of the century. As long as we continue to go against nature's trajectory, everything we build will collapse. This is why these days, nothing seems to work. The vaccines are here but so is the virus. The election is over but no one is calm. And most of all, no one feels confident about the future, and no one knows what to do about it. Yet, the answer is in plain sight. If we go against nature and keep thinking as individuals, we will have no future and no solution will work. If we think as an integral humanity, which is a part of the integral planet, we will succeed and our plans will work. In truth, I am very hopeful. I see how nature leaves us, no choice but to rethink everything. Unity is the clear direction of our movement, since this is where all of nature is evolving, and we are not excluded. The only question is how much we will agree to suffer before we go along. The end is good for sure. It's the road getting there that worries me. Michael Leitman, on Quora, what is the future of national borders? There will be no borders, nations or countries in the future. We will all become members of one nation that spans the entire globe, with a language that is clear to everyone. Also, religions, beliefs and customs will lose their importance and fade away in the process. In other words, we will eventually realize our complete interconnectedness and interdependence as a single whole, in balance with nature's integral laws. Replacing all kinds of geographic and ideological boundaries will be a good and positive attitude among all human beings. The transition to that final state will take place through understanding that we cannot achieve a good life unless we each concede our egos to some extent. While in our present reality, such a picture seems utopian and unrealistic, and that each individual, group and nation is responsible only for itself and its own citizens, the laws of nature stipulate that we need to advance toward an absolute state of connection, with attitudes of mutual consideration dwelling in such connection. This kind of connection exists above every limit we have in our world, whether it be borders, gender, race or language, among others, which we have developed over the generations. In short, nothing will stop us from integrating with each other, as nature necessitates this process. Written, edited by students of Kabbalist Dr. Michael Leitman. Michael Leitman, on Quora, what is the root cause of antisemitism, and how do you fight antisemitism concretely? Antisemitism stems from Jews having a special role in the world, which they are neither aware of nor do they carry it out. That role is to positively connect as one man with one heart, that is, to develop harmonious unified relations. If the Jews developed their connections to unite above their differences, then antisemitism would subside and humanity's attitude toward the Jews would shift to a positive one. Until the Jews positively connect, people will feel increasing rejection and repulsion toward them. Developing positive connection among Jews depends on developing the inner Jew within, which means elevating the desire to connect in a good and kind way toward one another over egoistic desires to use and exploit each other for personal benefit. This special quality and role that the Jews inherited stems from their foundation as a nation some 4,000 years ago, when Abraham gathered people from ancient Babylon who were willing to unite, since they felt the rampant social division of the time as a major problem that needed solving. Thus, they applied Abraham's method, which led them to attain the lofty principle of love your neighbor as yourself. By doing so, they became known as the people of Israel, Israel coming from the words Yasharakel, straight to God, that is, people with an intention to be as loving and giving as the force of love and bestowal itself. They later became known as the Jews, from the word for unity, Yehud. The uniqueness of this quality is that unlike other nations, the Jews had no natural or biological root. Instead, they were a group of people from different nations who gathered based on a unifying ideology, and who worked on themselves in order to attain the quality of love for one's fellow man. People are thus either attracted to or repelled by Jews due to this unifying quality that dwells in them. If the Jews develop positive relations and friendships with one another above their differences, they will awaken that tendency to unite in the tectonic plates of human consciousness, and humanity will also find that it gains the strength to unite above its growing divisiveness. If not, then humanity will increasingly feel that the Jews are behind their problems, and antisemitism will continue rising as a force of nature that surfaces in order to awaken the Jews to rediscover their unifying role in the world. Written, edited by students of Kabbalist Dr. Michael Leitman. To not feel a lack of anything. Question. According to the recent research of physiologists, the level of family well-being in the first 5 years of life can determine the entire future fate of a person. For example, people who grew up in poor families have a high level of cortisol in the body, a stress hormone that makes a person more cautious. People who grew up in wealthy families have a thickened cortex in the parietal and temporal areas, which are responsible for visual perception and long-term memory. It is directly connected to a person's high level of achievement. Well provided for children are less likely to be self-sacrificing and altruistic. They share money less eagerly with others. And it is the other way around for children who grew up in poverty who are more inclined toward altruism, eager to share, to sacrifice. What affects the fact that a person attracts or repels money, his earnings? Answer. If we are talking about human nature, of course, it is strictly individual. Does someone have compassion for his close ones or not? Did he see it in his parents or was he taught? It all depends on a person plus the environment. But, on the other hand, if he gets into a certain environment, it can be instilled in him. There they proved to him that the state of empathy corrects him, makes him a completely different being. Question: is the key to everything to feel the one who is near you? This feeling must be developed. What suggestion can be given to a person so he always feels provided for? Answer: a person is a product of society. He must be in a certain society that will educate him in this way. Question: what advice can be given to the whole of humanity in order to feel that there is no lack of anything? Answer: show each other an example of how you wish well for everyone. From CAB TV's Kabbalah Express, January 12, 2021. New Life 1293. Phases of Dealing with Conflicts.
Hello, and thanks for joining us on the New Life Show with Dr. Michael Lightman. Hello, Dr. Lightman. Hello, everyone. Hello, Yael Shadalel. Hello. And today we'd like to talk about how to deal with conflicts. Conflicts are part of life, and according to the integral worldview, how should we deal with conflicts in a smart way, on our way to a better life? Be with us, Yael. Yael, please. Yeah. We're on a course, and there's a group of students that have many different conflicts in life, in family life, at work, with neighbors, and I'd like to introduce several representing conflicts so that today we'll be able to better understand what is the right way to solve a conflict and how do we get there from the point where we enter the conflict and until we reach the desirable solution. So who's with us? The people in this group, what conflicts do they have? So first of all, we have a business family conflict. There's a dad who has a business. He built it for many years, and the time has come. He decided to retire. He has three sons, and they're supposed to manage the business. Each has very good ideas, but from a completely different approach. One is more conservative, another one more innovative. Someone wants to expand. Each of them has very good intentions, but there's already a conflict, non-simple conflict going on there, lots of tension. Each has his own expert that says that that's the right way to go and that we have to find a way that will suit everyone. The next conflict is a couple that got married not long ago. The man, his approach is to save and to be prepared so that we'll have money for harder times. The wife, no, she wants to live life. She doesn't want to look at money all the time. In short, every spending creates an entire mess at home, disputes, and so on. A third family, they went on a trip. Two parents, three children. The children are already grown-ups, they're teenagers. They came to the hotel, and each of them wanted to do something else. One of them wanted to do water sports, someone else to walk in nature, someone else to do ice skating or something else. In short, they argued so much that they didn't go anywhere, and they stayed in the hotel. But they already have a bad feeling. It wasn't a good day. And this characterizes what happens in the family in many other cases, too. And we have a building where the neighbors were offered to put a fence around the park in front of their house. Some of them want to, some of them don't want to. The relationships between the neighbors due to this offer are becoming more tense. And we've described several conflicts in different realms, but on this course today, we'd less like to deal with one or another kind of conflict, but to learn about the right way of how to manage conflicts correctly. And I'd like to open with the question of, is it possible to do without conflicts? Is it possible in life? Of course not. It's clear to us that we can't live this way in a way where no one will feel the other person or take them into consideration. Taking them into consideration, meaning hearing what the other person has to say and to agree or not agree. But there's nothing worse than not listening to each other. That even though that we are in a give-and-take relationship or some kind of relationship, but we pay no attention to each other. And surely that's not okay. And there always have to be conflicts. It's impossible not to have conflicts, and we have to feel that we're in conflict with each other. Why? Because each of us lives inside himself. A person lives inside himself. There's nothing you can do about that. And therefore, everyone was born with their own way in which they perceive things and with their own nervous systems, with their different tastes and smells and the way that people see life and got a different kind of education and habits. In short, each of us is completely different than the others. The only question is, our big desire that includes all of these discernments, is it taught correctly how to reveal and bridge the gaps between us? But that we're all different, that's for sure. Are these gaps really starting to shake me up and push each of us out of balance? Or not? I understand that there's room for everyone. And I accept that as a given, even though that it enters my realm and affects me and so on. And here it's a problem, the measure to which each of us can allow the other person to enter their own realm. What's the difference between people that are able and are unable to solve conflicts? This has to do with many natural discernments that they got from nature. The level to which they can grasp the other person, respond. Here maybe I don't feel that the other person's related to me, and I simply throw them out of my circle, and then I don't care what that person thinks. Like, we're not that considerate of Australia or South America, for example. Same way, you have those that are closer or more distant that act according to that example of who's close, who's further away for me, and so on. Yeah, it's not always easy to agree with our relatives. Sure, of course. And besides, we also have to understand that even though that I got education and a certain upbringing and examples throughout life, but in modern times, it seems that each of us at home, at school, in the university, at our workplace, wherever we go, we have to go through some kind of course that teaches us how to, let's call it, enter society. We're taught, or at least reminded, of the rules that a person has to keep in order to correctly exist in society. Otherwise, they won't be able to stand him, and they won't be able to stand him. And as a result, it could just be that he leaves his place of work, or he's fired. And sometimes there are things that, you know, you're being sued for and so on. On this course, we're talking about what do we want to teach a person so he can solve conflicts. And what is a correct solution, the correct way to solve conflicts? So this isn't an ordinary course, but it's one that's meant for those that are supposed to solve conflicts of other people. No. It's intended for every person, this course? Yes. And the people that came here, they want to study the integral method in order to realize this on themselves. Yes. So what is the right way to solve a conflict? What should we aspire for? Aspire for everyone to be happy about it. So a good solution is that everyone's content with it. For sure. The question is it possible to reach that? In what way? And what does it mean for everyone to be content? Content with what? With what kind of solution? Or compensation? And so on. So part of the solution could also be that one of the sides is compensated, but the final point is that everyone's content. Of course, compensation is one of the sides or ways of how to arrange the conflict, how to manage it. Like you said, that there are a few teenagers, children, and a family, or like with those children that are supposed to get something. And what are the stages? How do we get there? That's the question. Can you teach us a way to work? Once there's a conflict, what are the stages? What do we have to do in order to reach a happy end? What are the integral principles? Well, of course, I'm not a lawyer or a judge, and I'm not going to solve it the way the legal system would solve it. But a few tips from the integral system, from what the wisdom of Kabbalah teaches us. The wisdom of Kabbalah, first and foremost, demands of us to reach a connection between us. We're not standing in front of a judge that to begin with is dividing. Suppose there are the three of us, three brothers, standing in front of the judge to divide the inheritance, and then he separates us, each goes into his own room and starts arranging these things with us. No. This isn't the method in which the wisdom of Kabbalah works. The wisdom of Kabbalah says love covers all crimes, meaning that we have to bring them to connection. Connection in all of its different possible ways, and they have to start the discussion about the inheritance out of the understanding that they are brothers. I want to expand the discussion from simple inheritance to, suppose there are neighbors that are fighting about something. Same principle. To bring them to a happy middle, to a connection, where as if there is nothing to fight about. How do you do it? Because there is what to fight about. No, there isn't. We have to work in a way that they will feel that they're connected and there's nothing to fight about. And then gradually, let us open this up. And what can we do with this topic, subject that is spiting us against each other? and you know that there's aggravation and who knows how it's going to end. So we start with there not being any quarrel, but we are in the best possible relations as we can envision them. And a person has to put himself in that situation to get rid of the strife and go into an inner state. This is your work, suppose. Yeah, but that person has to go into a state of inner peace with another person. Okay, that's the first stage. When they come to that, then we start seeing this conflict that we're opening now, bit by bit, in order to use it to increase the power of connection and love between them. So, it's not that dad passed away, leaving us with an inheritance that we're fighting over. So this isn't what it's about. But how do we connect even more as a result that unfortunately our dad passed away, leaving us with an inheritance? And we're not divided in three, we don't part in three directions now, but dad leaves it to us in order to connect us from this point and on. How do we use this inheritance in order for us to make us more connected? Because for sure, this is what our dad would like. And in a conflict between spouses about money, are they separate? Did they part? No, they're together, but they look at things different. Financially wise, they look at things differently. So they're fighting about money all the time, buy or not to buy. So we divide this money for several goals, but that each goal increases our connection. You're making a kind of flip here. I'm not making a flip. I'm not taking the factor that's the inheritance or the money left over from different, at the end of the year they got some prize at work or something. But I'm using it in order to strengthen the connection between those that are in dispute. So you're taking that separating factor that is going to be the separating factor, and you invert it like a lever that will lift the connection between the different parties in the conflict to a more advanced degree. So in the meantime, there are two levels. The first is to reach a feeling of connection. Suppose Yael and I were two parts of the same conflict. So the first stage would be to reach a feeling that we're connected as if there's no conflict, no strife, and also that there's no reason. What do you mean by no reason? That there's no inheritance or money that each of you wants to spend according to the way you see it. But what do we do? Because there, as if there isn't. So can you explain that as if, give it to a third party, as if, until we agree in heart and soul, the third party keeps the money or doesn't allow us to divide the inheritance or whatever. Okay, so the first step of reaching a feeling that we're connected, even though that we have a certain conflict, is demanding a kind of game for us to play, a kind of game that as if there's no separating factor. In advance, you have to rise above the conflict and invert this factor, whatever it is, money, the desire to spend or whatever, to turn it into something that increases your good connection. Okay, that's the next stage, that this thing increases the positive connection between us. Technically, I understand what you're saying. Yes, I've took something, like a raw force. It's like I have an engine that's generating force and it's working full steam ahead. But you made a U-turn. The car is driving in the other direction now. It's like in many Eastern martial arts, you take your opponent's energy and use it. My problem is what? That here we're not talking about machines. We're talking about people, about emotional beings. When I'm in conflict with you, my gut is, you know, I'm about to explode. I'm like a pressure cooker, and so are you probably. Now, each of us is sure that he's right. Otherwise, there wouldn't have been a conflict. So how do we clean ourselves, clear ourselves of these negative emotions and leave it as something that you can work with, like dough or something? This is the principle of integral education. Can you explain it? Yeah, it's very interesting that we're always advancing toward increasing our love, positive connection, more powerful emotions between brothers and a family and so on, between people, between countries even. We're not solving any problem. It doesn't mean that the problem was solved. If we reach less good ties than before. So, if the ties are not as good at the end, is it good or not? It's not acceptable to begin with. We can always use anything along the way, inheritance, money from the bank, something else. We need to use it only on condition. We can use it only on condition that it brings us to increase the positive connection between us. Okay, going back to that, because this is something that I would like for you to explain a bit more. But first of all, I'd like to advance. First of all, connection. Then the conflict that we took and inverted in order to increase our connection, what's the next stage? Next stage is to realize that if we find a solution, then we reach a state where all that intensity that was supposed to separate us and make us enemies and a family and who knows, maybe even for generations. So that same source is now actually becoming the source of connection. So going back to the second stage where we make this flip, take a family with three children, for example. Each of them wants something else. They have leisure time together. They're on vacation, and each of them wants something else. None of them willing to concede to the others. How do you really take this problem and increase the connection by it? What does it mean? First of all, they should sit down and discuss how can all of them become content. We have 2 weeks, or who knows how much. Within these 2 weeks, we have to perform such actions that we will feel happier, more content, closer, and so on between us. So it won't be that each of us comes home from the vacation by themselves, but all of us together, connected. Great. So everyone says what their fantasy is. Just one question. Each of them has to say what will do good to him, or what does he think will do good to... No, we'll discuss that later, but we'll discuss both. You're right. So, and then we have to discuss and find out what options do we have. Each has an option of their own, and opposite that, suppose two other options that aren't his cup of tea. And that's how it is for everyone. So how do we compensate for that?
What does it mean? How do we compensate for that? How do we come out with a good feeling?
Because we don't already need to be in... It's not that we're going to be on a vacation where each of us does what he feels like, but each of us does 33.3% of what he wants and 66% of what the others want. And what will I gain from that? From that, he'll gain that they'll come back with a good feeling, all of them together. All of them together. And each of them will want to continue doing good things to the other person. And if we couldn't do so, and suppose we did what we had to do when we were at home. You know, we cleaned the apartment together and, you know, we did what we had to do. But now on this vacation, we learned how to do good things together, adventures. So this demands of each of the people to put the connection between them before the conflict or one's own personal interests. Yes, because by that, I want for them to gain a stronger family connection. Yeah, but suppose I'm demanded to act so, what will I get out of it? You'll see how content you are that they, together with you, are participating in what you are, just like you are now participating in their games. Then, together with that, you're now taking them with you. Okay, I understand that this building that we have built, it's based on enjoying what they are enjoying. Look, I'll tell you a secret. What I enjoy is what I enjoy. And I want for her to join what I like doing. But how could it be just one way? That's the conflict. So there's nothing to talk about here because you can't solve that. I want to bring you to a state where you change your mind and then you enjoy what the other person enjoys. Because you get pleasure out of allowing the other person to enjoy and that you enjoy along with them. And what will I get out of it? That you have double pleasure. What do you mean double? There's pleasure where you enjoy in whatever way you enjoy, and there is pleasure where you follow the other person and enjoy the other person. Because the other person receives pleasure and you enjoy together with them even more than it was were it your own. And I'm not regretting at the same time that we're doing what she wanted instead of what I did. No, because you're getting pleasure. So what is the key to getting pleasure out of what she's enjoying? Why can't you enjoy because she's having pleasure? Because I'm myself and she's she? No, that's something psychological. She can tell you there's nothing special about this. It's just psychological. So what do I have to understand so that I'll be able to enjoy what she enjoys instead of crying about not doing what I wanted? Because then your pleasure is unlimited, because it does not depend on how much you enjoy in your own vessels, that you've prepared yourself for this pleasure and so on. But here, it's completely something else. It's something that does not enter your vessels. But it is a pleasure that you did not expect. A pleasure where you simply relieve yourself of all of your demands and everything, and you go into a kind of game that has to give you pleasure. Dr. Leitman, unfortunately our time's up. Last question. How do you sum up the integral approach to deal with conflicts?
The main thing is to invert this, turn it upside down. Every conflict, you can turn it around and bring it to a good and sweet connection, and this way to enjoy the entire world. Dr. Lightman, thank you very much. Thank you. Yeah, thanks for being with us. Till next time, all the best.
Three parts of society in terms of spiritual work. We are in a society, surrounded by many different people. Regarding spiritual work, when a person wants to merge with the Creator, which is achieved precisely in the intention, society can be divided into three parts. One part is the people of Israel, Israel, which strive directly to the Creator. The second part are the Egyptians, that is, a society of people who do not care about spirituality at all. They naturally do what they feel is good for them. They may not understand what I am doing, and it does not matter to them. The main thing is that they feel good. The third part is the Erevrav, mixed multitude, that is, people who believe that one should obey the commandments without intention. The intention is a completely different picture. A person must rise above his egoism, attract the upper light to himself, convert egoism into altruism, and to change absolutely everything within oneself and to begin to feel the Creator, the higher world. This is huge and very difficult spiritual work. Therefore, there are people who believe that it should not be done. They once fell from the level of correct intentions for the sake of others and for the sake of the Creator into egoistic intentions for themselves. From CAB TV's Spiritual States, April 22, 2019. The Tragedy of Young Talents. Question. From early childhood, questions like who is the best start to catch our attention. There are many TV shows where an adult celebrity talks with a young 3-year-old child who must show how smart he is, how well he plays, or how nicely he speaks. The children sing and the parents standing behind the scenes welling up in tears. They subscribe to the philosophy of competing and winning makes life complete, vibrant, and meaningful. It starts at a young age. What are your thoughts about it? Answer: I'm strongly against it. After all, nothing can ensure our happy future except the right attitude toward connection between us. If only these contests were conducted in order to show how getting closer to each other elevates people, makes them better and purer, and how much happiness it brings. Whatever you may say, there were some good character building examples in the Soviet Union. It is good to cultivate mutual help, connection, and support in people. This is where we need to direct a child constantly, even though it is completely against man's ego, against our nature. Although there were still gangs, rapists, murderers, and so on, all the same, in propagating the virtues of kindness, mutual assistance, love, and selflessness, in this regard, Russia was in some ways ahead of the entire planet. Comment: however, I must say that the lives of these young talents who sing like Robtina Loretti, who were leading the pack at a young age, had very hard fates, not only in the Soviet Union, but across the world. My response: well, they were promised so much. What they imagined their future to be. They are just children, they don't understand how this all may come to an end and what it will be like afterward. When their voices disappear and they're no longer popular, the audience no longer worships them as some kind of idol, that's it. Comment: only a few have more or less a good fate. The rest of these young talents end up being consumed in this fire. My response: indeed. And what's worse, you end up boosting the child's ego. It is not about whether or not he can be successful later in life with his talent. The problem is that he no longer receives the response from others that he used to receive. He was developed to the point of believing that he will be receiving millions of times more each and every time. Suddenly it all starts to subside and the poor kid doesn't know where to turn to or what to do. Comment: I'd love to convey all of this to those parents who put their kids up on these stages with such joy. My response: it's all great if you don't know the tragedy awaiting each of these children once their talent is left without due response, without applause, once he or she is no longer popular. Question: what conclusions can we draw from all of this? That these shows should be replaced by a different kind? Answer: of course. Transform them into being about giving to others. Only in bestowal can we find higher and higher states, when one demands more and more of himself without any possible return. Comment: that would be amazing. My response: it is possible to show that. We can develop it further. We can promote it. What one would take out of it is less important. At least these examples will stay. Then one would not be left with nothing. Question: so you support such a cinematic illusion to go on? Answer: yes, of course. Comment: but now there is reality television. About life and truth. My response: it is egoistic truth. It is still a lie. It is finite. It leads to tragedies. But not here. You are shown the truth, and with your nature you begin to understand that you can't quite implement this truth. What you are seeing are ideals. And these ideals are necessary. Comment: so you're against showing the ugly side of truth, of letting the garbage out under the banner of reality TV? My response: no. This would never aim a person in the right direction. After all, a person is an egoist. On the contrary, we must play with him the way we do with our kids. Question: so that he grows through playing with these idealistic, beautiful examples? Answer: yes. This is just like a game with a child, how to make adults out of the whole of humanity. All humanity are children. So why wouldn't you act with them the way you do with your own kids? From CabTV's News with Dr. Michael Leitman, January 7, 2021.